This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're about to hear a preview of a new opera that will have its world premiere tomorrow night at the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. The opera is Tanya. The story is loosely based on the kidnapping of Patty Hearst by the radical cult group the Symbionese Liberation Army. One of my guests is the composer, Anthony Davis, who also composed the opera X, The Life and Times of Malcolm X, which was performed by the New York City Opera in 1986. Davis first became known as a jazz pianist and composer. 10 years ago, jazz critic Francis Davis described him as being in the forefront of a new generation of musicians who can claim the hard-won advances of the jazz avant-garde of the 60s and 70s as their starting point, and who can borrow from European concert music without jeopardizing their places in the African-American continuum. With us to perform excerpts from Tanya are Cynthia Aronson, who plays Patty Hearst, and Mark Doss, who plays Sinkew, the leader of the SLA. Alan Johnson is at the piano. We actually recorded our session yesterday on a day off from previews. I asked Anthony Davis if he sees Tanya as a companion piece to his opera about Malcolm X, with Sinkew as the false prophet, a false militant leading a false revolution.
Yeah, well, there are all kinds of falsehoods in this piece. I don't think there's, it's a chronicle of falsehoods all the way through it. And I think that, that's part of it. I mean, I think naturally a composer is attracted to that. I mean, with Elijah Muhammad and X, was another compelling character to write for, because the idea of the person who really sweeps people away and sweeps them into his world, into what he's thinking, and that's very powerful and very, very powerful thing to represent on stage and in music. And so I thought about that. And then also with this story, what's really interesting is if we look at the whole issue of brainwashing, how a person is brainwashed in the sense that she's drilled into becoming Tanya, but then she's drilled into being Patty again, too. So I felt that balance, I think, is really important in the piece.
When you portray both worlds as being equally shallow.
Yes, I think so. And the idea that in a sense, we're buying into whatever doctrine someone else imposes on us.
Actually, this might be a good point to introduce one of the arias that Patty sings, speaking of shallowness, because the whole idea is like, who will play me in the movie of the book of my life?
Right. This is an aria. Michael John Lacuse is the librettist, and it's called Who Will Play Me in the Movie of the Book of My Life?
And we have Cynthia Aronson with us, who stars as Patty and Tanya in the opera Tanya. And accompanying her at the piano is Alan Johnson.
Do I wanna look Hollywood? Do I wanna
Cynthia, are you used to singing librettos as colloquial as this one?
No, I've never sung a libretto as colloquial as this one. Even small words like wannabe instead of want to be or...
Oh, that's right, because you're supposed to be really pronouncing the T at the end of want. And,
right,
and,
it's actually written wannabe.
So have you had to sing differently because of how colloquial the libretto is?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I work really hard on the diction and on really trying to make the words clear. And I work on that normally. I like to sing in English. I do a lot of contemporary music.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm used to singing English. And I don't think I really have to change any. Just in my thoughts, I have to change something.
You know, we should mention, in speaking of how colloquial the libretto is, our listeners haven't heard half of it.
Really?
Yeah, it gets very colloquial. First of all, you know, since you're dealing with revolutionaries and the SLA, there's, you know, lines about death to the fascist parasite, which feeds on the people, and lines about offing the bourgeois pigs and blowing them away. And there's language that, of course, we can't repeat on the air because it is obscene. Anthony, I'm curious about finding a musical style or musical styles that match the kind of political rhetoric that you wanted to use in here and the kind of mood that you wanted.
Well, I find that this was one of the most easiest text I've ever confronted for setting to music because it sings. It really does. I mean, I think the colloquial language disguises the fact that it's really rhythmically set beautifully, and the rhythm of the language is really beautiful. Michael John is also a composer, so he's really...
he's the librettist.
Yes, and so he really understands how words sound. And in this case, when I was setting the words, I felt very free to use let the speech language sound, you know, to start with the speech language, the speech rhythms, and to look at the speech rhythms and how they really help me create melodic ideas and melodic and melodies. And so I felt that it was really, in a way, really easy to deal with. And also using repetition, repeating lines and repeating words, I think it really was fun and for me a real a joy to set to music.
I think some people will find it really incongruous that an opera should be using words like mother bleeper in it. And do you expect to get the kind of reaction from audiences like language like this doesn't belong in an opera, or is that
well, I never thought opera was highbrow anyway. It's always had a tradition of being, of all the classical art forms, it's the one that always used to communicate to me with popular culture. I mean, if you look at Mozart operas, I mean, Mozart's operas were considered obscene too, Marriage of Figaro or certainly Magic Flute. So I think and the idea of using vernacular language, Mozart, when he did his first opera in German, that was pretty shocking to people too. But I think that the idea of really creating an opera that's about American culture and about our language and American English, you know, not some Italianate English or any other English, but our English, and something about our culture that reflects our culture. I think that's something that we need to really be thinking about. And I think that the language in this opera is very successful because it really captures everyday speech, yet it is poetic and lyrical. And it captures this way that people spoke, particularly in the 70s. You know,
slogans.
People involved with Berkeley radicals might speak, and that's I think that's important too. And it's not to me, it's not that contrived patois of the Porgy and Bess or any of that stuff. And the language really sounds real. And really, I think it really has a rings true, and I think that musically, that means that, you know, I'm halfway there in a sense, because if the language rings true, then musically what I can do, I think, can be real too.
Well, I think musically, you know, you're talking about using real language and like our language, you know, like the language of colloquial American. You're doing that musically too. You know, you're using jazz and classical.
Mm-hmm.
Forms within the opera.
Definitely, and I think, you know, that's something that the libretto really created for me too. But the idea of using And also, I think what helped me was that my experience as an improviser, because when I think of how I'm setting a line to music, I think of, in a way, I think about the way Miles Davis might play or Billie Holiday might sing or something, because rhythmically I can play with the language and the music so that the language sounds, so that the words sound. And I think that's really important part of how I conceive the music. And I think the interaction of the words with the music, I think, works really well.
Cynthia, you spend probably about half of the opera blindfolded and handcuffed in your slip, lying on the floor, which is not the best position, I'd imagine, from which to sing an aria, and probably also not the most comfortable position to be facing the audience. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to be in that position on stage?
Well, it was really interesting because it really gave me an idea. I mean, it's totally nothing like the experience that Patty Hearst went through. But
They didn't make her sing. Yeah.
I mean, it didn't make her sing. But I really feel helpless. Uh-huh. I'm really literally at the mercy. I mean, my hair falls in my mouth. It gets in my mouth, and I can't get it out. And the blindfold maybe slips, and I can't, you know, deal with anything. And I'm really at the mercy of everybody else on stage. And it's a very helpless feeling.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the new opera, Tanya, based on the story of Patty Hearst. We're also hearing excerpts performed in our studio. With me is the composer of the opera, Anthony Davis, Cynthia Aronson, who plays Patty Hearst, and Mark Doss, who plays Cinque. Alan Johnson is at the piano. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. We're speaking with people from the new opera, Tanya, which has its opening Wednesday night. It's being produced by the American Music Theater Festival in Philadelphia. I want to introduce Mark Doss, who plays Cinque, the head of the SLA. Welcome, Mark. And Anthony, we're going to hear a duet between Mark and Cynthia. Let me ask you to set the context for the duet we're going to hear.
Okay, well, this is after the kidnapping, and Patty's blindfolded, and she's remembering. And she's saying, "I remember the Cadillac we had, my mom's." And she's still remembering things from the Hearst world, from her past. And Cinque comes in and starts to sing to her, and she says, "Patty, you're not Patty anymore. No." Then as the aria proceeds, he sings this aria really about rage, about her coming to the rage. And at the end of the aria, it begins the rape scene, the actual rape of Patty, which happens at the end of the scene.
Birth. and the smoke in your jumbo jet. I'm the bomb at your Super Bowl. I'm the outlawed. I'm the other law. I'm the anger you hunted down, who now hunts you. Anger you captured, you sold and abused. I'm the scream at your birth and the chaos you try to deny. I'm the shadow in your closet, under your pillow, in your dark and darkest dreams. I'm the bomb at your Super Bowl. I'm your love and your fear. Come, lover, come to the rage. Come to the rage, come to the rage. Come to the rage, come to the rage. Come to the rage, come to the rage. Come to the rage.
Wonderful. That's great. And that's Mark Doss and Cynthia Aronson singing an aria from the new opera, Tanya. And as Anthony Davis mentioned before, you sang that aria, this is followed by the rape scene. How is that choreographed? Do you want to talk about working that out on stage?
Very delicately, I think. We've done some reworking on it, and I think we've come up with something that's very much in good taste. And I think the symbolism that's involved is more prominent, actually, than what is actually happening on the stage. But one is left with the impression that a rape has actually taken place. And as I said, it's done in good taste.
Do you want to add anything to that, Cynthia?
I just follow him. He does it all. I'm just lying there with my hands tied behind my back. It's up to Mark.
Let me ask you what I asked Cynthia before. Are you used to singing a score with a libretto as colloquial as the one in Tanya?
Well, actually, I was in X that
oh, sure,
Anthony
okay.
had done
yeah,
so
yeah.
before. And a few other pieces. I've done a piece called Blake, I think, that was done by Leslie Adams in Cleveland. And a lot of things in workshops, sort of at Lyric Opera Chicago. We have a composer in residence there, so I did a couple of works there.
Are there colorblind roles in opera now, or basically the only roles in opera the roles that were written black for an African American singer like yourself?
Well,
you know what I mean by colorblind casting. Like, you know, in a sitcom episode, if there's a doctor. Usually, if the doctor's not written African American, it's cast as a white person.
Right.
But in some colorblind casting, if it says doctor, it's like, well, who's ever good gets the part, and it mm-hmm. could be, you know, an African American actor, a white actor. But it seems like in opera, it's fairly set racially, unless that's really opening up.
Sometimes, I mean, the miracles of makeup are quite far-reaching. Grand opera is something that deals with distance, usually. The makeup can be, I mean, I've worn a false nose, and people say afterwards, I didn't know that was you. I mean, color changes are not totally out of line because someone does Aida, and you don't expect them not to put on darker makeup. At the same time, there are different concepts that a director can have to make a work more contemporary and then bring in different, you know, cultural, ethnic, whatever, diversity into a production.
I think you wanted to add something
to
that.
Yeah, opera's always been more open, I think, than a lot of the traditional television or movies or theater about casting. I mean, because you always see, I mean, at the Met, for example, you always see, you can see sisters who are black and Asian and white or whatever. I mean, that's been happening for a long time.
It seems to have been harder for men, though.
It's harder for men, though.
Think.
I mean, they've been open for the Kathy Battles and Price and other people like that. But I think with male roles, I think it's been slower to open up. And actually, particularly with tenors, actually, even more so than basses or baritones. But I think that that's beginning to change. But but traditionally, opera has been the idea of this sort of this remove from reality and portraying everything as realistically. Since when someone's singing, actually, is in a sense singing, is not realistic in a certain way. I think it allows for the that you know this kind of casting to happen.
No, I saw a production of Tanya Sunday night. It was a preview. The official opening night is yet to happen. I'd like to know what goes through your minds as you're preparing for an opening night, which must be one of the most exciting and terrifying moments for any performer or composer. Anthony, what about you? You're like in the back of the audience or waiting in the hall or something right on opening night. You've done your work already. It's kind of out of your hands at that point.
Well, that's the feeling. I mean, the feeling is, I feel I'm in great hands. So that's first of all. I mean, it's a feeling of confidence in the people I've worked with. And I do have confidence in them. And, you know, we've worked hard up to this point, and I just want them to enjoy it. And I try to let everything, I'm going to leave the score at home. You know, I'm not going to bring it. It's just that it's letting the piece go and let it happen and not feel that, because I think for a composer, the hardest thing is to realize that you're not in control anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop and say, oops, wait, that was too slow, or that was too fast, or that was too soft, or whatever. You know, you just have to let it go. I mean, and it's out into the world, and it's something else. It's not. It's never. It's. It becomes its own animal in a way. It's something that's that is beyond who you are, and that's exciting too. I mean, that's fun.
Well, I love the opera, and I wish you all great success with it,
and
best of luck. And I want to thank everybody for being here with us, the composer Anthony Davis, Cynthia Aronson, who plays Tanya, Mark Das, who plays Sinkyu, and with us at the piano today was Alan Johnson. Thanks to all of you for performing and for talking with us.